on the inside handoff. He looks around and he gets free to the end zone. What a play by Campanaro. Bell, he's going to switch back to the other side, and he's got a running lane. Bell cuts back and takes it to the end zone for the touchdown. Play action, and Vic guns it to the end zone, and it's the touchdown. And this kick is also wide left for the victory, for the first win of the year for the Ravens. And Tucker's kick is good.
What a difference a kicker makes, Justin Tucker, with the game winner in Heinz Field. What a heartbreaker. Thursday Night Football. This is Greg Rosenthal. I'm here with Chris Wesseling. We're going to get it to all the Week 4 games in just a bit with the whole crew. Of course, Dan Handis and Mark Sessler coming up. But first, Wes, we got to talk about, I don't know if this was a classic, but it was a lot of fun to watch. And the Steelers had this game won about six different times.
Two missed field goals in the final 3 minutes of the game from Josh Scobie.
Oh, my God.
Who missed two field goals in the opener and an extra point in the second week of the season, and he's making $3.4 million guaranteed this year.
He is?
Yes.
I did not
They
know
acquired
that.
Him for a sixth-round pick after they acquired Brandon Boykin for a fifth-round pick, and both have really gone to waste.
And I don't think Josh Scobie's going to be on this team. I know they gave him a lot of money. But
well, they couldn't trust him in overtime twice with fourth downs. Both times they put the ball in Michael Vick's hands. Both times Michael Vick failed, and Le'Veon Bell was the best player on the field but didn't get his number called with the game on the line.
Well, let's unpack it all, and let's start really with those fourth down play calls. The Steelers had so many chances to win the game in regulation. They were up 20-7. There was a key Joe Flacco fourth and one sneak of his own with just a few minutes left of regulation. At that point, everyone thought the game was over, but the Steelers couldn't close it out. There's no rule that you have to just set up a long field goal by Josh Scobie. So I do think, you know, they gave the ball to Le'Veon Bell at times. They gave Mike Vick a chance to get key first downs at times, and he couldn't do it. But what do you think about the fourth down calls? A, going for it at all, and then Mike Vick on the sweep one play, and Mike Vick airmailing a pass to Antonio Brown on the other.
Well, you have to go for it because you can't trust your kicker.
Right.
You even said before Scobie attempted the fourth quarter field goals, he's missing it.
Yeah.
You were confident he was missing
it. I was saying they should go for it then. I thought you had a better chance of getting, I think it was 4 yards or something like that, and winning the game on that play than you were with Scobie winning, getting the kick, because you were going to still give the ball back to Baltimore.
And we both believe that you put it in your own team's hands. You don't give the other team a chance to win. So you direct your own fate, and they failed twice. And they couldn't take advantage of a Ravens team that had three fumbles by their quarterback, the fourth down that you mentioned, and Sean Spence made a great play on a fake field goal.
Forgot about that one. There were so many
crazy plays.
The Ravens
had miscues, and the Steelers had miscues. Both, but with 2 minutes left in the fourth quarter, the Steelers had a 99.82% chance of winning. The Ravens had a 0.18 chance of winning the game.
You don't see that happen too often. I mean, it took the missed kick. It also took not picking up a first down. And it should be said, it also took Joe Flacco, who at one point in the game left the field after four straight incompletions, a fourth and 10 pass, actually wasn't an incompletion, where he took a sack. And at that point of the game, like you're saying, right before the two-minute warning, it felt like the Ravens season was over. It was 0-4. Flacco had an ugly interception, an ugly fumble, did not have any weapons on the field. Steve Smith was hurt. Even Michael Campanaro was hurt. Crockett Gilmore wasn't in this game. It looked absolutely...
He was throwing to Darren Waller and Boyle, who are fifth and sixth round rookies with a combined two receptions coming into the game.
It looked absolutely over. And to Joe Flacco's credit, it was a bad game, but he still does deserve credit for his 25-yard throw to Kamar Aiken while he's getting hit on third and long to help set up the game-tying field goal, because that's a big-time throw. And Flacco, you know, he's come up with those throws in the past, and there's not a ton of quarterbacks who can make that throw. It takes a lot of arm strength, and he did it there, and that's why he's Joe Flacco. He's not the best quarterback in the world, but he can come up with those plays.
It's not hyperbole to say that this saved the Ravens season.
No.
Only one team in history, the 1992 Chargers, has ever been 0-4 and made the playoffs.
Oh, my gosh.
I mean, so it's a season saver. And the Steelers were up 20-7 in a third quarter. First time since November of 1964 that they have given up a 13-point lead at home.
And this is going to really hurt the Steelers. Vic said it was one of the toughest losses of his career. He said that the fourth down pass to Antonio Brown is going to haunt him for a long time. I've heard people blame the play call there. Antonio Brown was open. That was a gimme throw.
It looked
Vic
like
knew it.
He had the yips like Scobie did.
He did.
He just flat out overthrew the pass.
He talked after the game what a big game it was for him and his career, and I think he talked about that to the broadcaster. I mean, it was like he felt it on that play. He felt his age almost. You start thinking about it a little too much.
You do, and you wonder if he would have been thinking about it if his play caller had more trust in him throughout the game.
Right. Well, Michael Vick, they didn't give him much trust, and we'll move on to all the rest of the games first, but we do have to talk Vick quickly that he only averaged 4.8 yards per attempt. He completed 19 of 26 passes, but even when things were going well, everything was so short. I mean, he was in the Gabbert zone despite completing almost every pass, nothing down the field, and you kind of saw late maybe why they didn't trust him.
Well, yeah, and there's the whole Vic Antonio Brown dynamic. Brown's streak gets of 5 catches and 50 yards is cut short. You can blame Vic for the misfires, and they weren't on the same page. But in Vic's defense, Antonio Brown dropped a perfectly thrown bomb that not only would have given the Steelers 6 points, but would have made Vic's yards per attempt a lot higher.
That's a good point, and that would have, you know, potentially won them the game and knocked out their rivals. I mean, for this game to happen against Baltimore, too, of all teams, is a killer. Because I know what everyone's thinking that roots for an AFC North team. They're looking at Baltimore's schedule, and they see San Francisco and Cleveland next. And the Ravens aren't playing great. I mean, this was against a Michael Vick team that made a lot of mistakes. But you could see them winning those two games, getting back to 3-3 and being right back in the mix. Meanwhile, the Steelers are going to realize, well, it's not going to be that easy to win games without Ben Roethlisberger. You get a great performance from Le'Veon Bell, who doesn't get the ball in those key plays. He gets 150 yards from scrimmage. You still don't win. And a good outing from their defense. Defense played fine.
First 100-yard rusher against the Ravens in, I believe, 29 games. Le'Veon Bell was the best player on the field. The Steelers do have some young talent. Stephon Tuitt was great. Russ Cockrell? Is his, Ross, the guy they picked up from the Bills after he was cut 3 weeks ago was one of the best players on their defense. And Bud Dupree looked pretty good too. But, you know, when it mattered, the Ravens' power running game ran all over them.
They did. They did it in overtime, and they got a win. It keeps them at least somewhat in the mix. A huge victory. I'm looking forward to this rematch. Ravens-Steelers always deliver, and I'm especially looking forward to it because Steve Smith said Mike Mitchell, who knocked him out of the game with a hit to his back, is on his hit list. And you don't want to be on Steve Smith's hit list.
His lifetime hit list reminds me of Fred Schmoot, Aqib Talib, Janoris Jenkins. It's not a place you want to be.
It is not a place you want to be, but you do want to be with us to preview all these games, and we are going to get to it. Let's start the preview.
The Around the NFL Podcast. Only signs, prove it deals.
Welcome back to another edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. My name is Dan Hanses, and I'm joined by a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What's up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
Had a little, like, short circuit to start the show. I like to clock the show with my iPhone, and I hadn't hit start immediately as the intro started, and then Greg was like, oh, I'll help you out. Hit reset instead of start. Whole thing blown up.
Oh, okay, Dan, great story.
Greg is very into touching your personal property.
I know. It was an invasion of space, and which is usually okay, but then when you...
I blew it.
Well, he's your boss. He can have anything he wants that is yours.
Is that true?
Yeah.
Is that the rules of anything, society?
Anything that you think is yours, Greg has a right to.
He's not like...
They made a movie about that with...
What about my
Demi
wife?
Demi Moore and Woody Harrelson.
Sure.
That was
your wife? Sure.
Decent proposal.
I'm not comfortable with this arrangement.
Well, do you want to have a job?
I don't know if that's I want it at that level.
That's not how companies work. Maybe he's where not, you're from, Mark.
He's not king of the mongrels. He's
one of, you know how it works.
One of Mark's like 300 jobs prior to this, someone gave him erroneous information that he's been
I'm standing by it
ever since. This is the Thursday night, early Friday edition of the Around the NFL Podcast. You just heard, I like to call him the B-team, but let's face it. They're really an A-team because they're so knowledgeable and well-spoken. Chris Wessling and Greg Rosenthal, they gave you the recap of the Thursday night football matchup between, Mark?
Tonight's game featured the Ravens and the Steelers. I can't wait to find out what they talked about 4 minutes
yes,
ago.
Yes, so that is that is covered. And let me tell you something. And, Greg, you perhaps know this and perhaps don't. So I'm here to help you out. There are 32 teams. However, two teams, the Patriots and another team, have a bye, which means that there are only 30 teams. And you divide 30 by two, 15 games this week.
That's correct. I even know that the other team that's off, a potential team of ATL candidate back in the day, the Tennessee Titans.
Almost Titans. But just you know, that's a bummer that I couldn't even think who you were just then. But at the same time, you're a real team now. You could be the Jaguars.
They are fun to watch.
They are. They're a real football team. So, yes, 15 games. We just talked about the Thursday night game. So we got 14 games to get to and a lot of subplots. Listen, let's keep it real. Not the juiciest week. There will be better weeks in terms of matchups. But at the same time, we're also talking about NFL football, and that's fun. We like football, don't we, Wes?
I love it.
Isn't this, though, like we don't see the matchup that makes us – you know, drawn to week four, but sometimes that's when the best stuff happens because it's these games that aren't on our radar, then they blow up and become something beautiful.
Very true, and I suggest we have podcasts three times a week. The Sunday show, of course, after Sunday Night Football, we put that up. That's also on YouTube, so you could check that out. And we read those comments on iTunes, the review section on our last show, which was fun. Keep leaving comments and leaving the stars. It will lead to good things for all of us, and I'm not saying just the people in this room. Everyone involved with the show. So let's get to it. I mean, that's why we're here, to talk about week four of the National Football League. And, you know, this is the first week of the NFL's International Series, as it's called. Mark, you were heading to London in a few weeks. With Connor Orr. And by the way, check out Connor Orr has a long form. And he got a vanity URL, which is pretty heavy.
Wrote it on the sly. This thing just got dropped out of midair.
I barely knew about it.
NFL.com/victims of prey.
Birds of prey. That would be a much darker piece. Victims of prey. What?
That's like what the name of like a Dateline episode or something.
Birds of prey.
Keith Morrison. Victims of prey. Yes. Birds of prey. That reminds me of a really bad Live album. Remember the band Live?
Yes, I do.
The singer like became a crazy religious guy in the late period of the band, and then he named an album Birds of Prey.
Then he became Brian Hoyer.
Basically, they look exactly the same. So, yes, the first game we're going to talk about is between my beloved New York Jets and the Miami Dolphins, who are in London. The Dolphins are the home team. And you know who else is in London? And let's get them on the line right now. Brandon McGinnis, it is his final show. We'll get to that later. We have Handsome Hank.
Woo!
He doesn't like to be called that. That's what he's known on as the Damashek Show. We call him the notorious DOP, Henry Hodgson. What's up, buddy boy?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
How you doing? What's going on in London? What time is it over there?
It is 1:00 tonight. I'm a warm out, and I'm delighted to speaking to you guys.
All right. You're a little choppy there initially on the cell phone signal, and it gives us a little bit of pause about this entire segment.
Let me eat some better reception.
Okay. Listen, well, this is how we do it.
How has the reception been in London for these two teams? People getting
well played, Greg.
Excited about this AFC East battle. Are you excited as a Dolphins fan, Hank?
Well, of course I'm excited, but the problem is that the teams haven't actually yet arrived here. So in past years, I think teams have come out for the entire week and they've stayed here and they kind of get used to it. But the Dolphins have Jets have decided to fly Thursday night, so they get in on Friday morning UK time. So there's a little less excitement, let's say, around it because they're just not here yet.
There is there's a great piece in the New York Times today about all the things the Jets, all the different things they're doing to ensure the players are as comfortable as possible, including bringing their own toilet paper, because apparently, and Hank, maybe you could speak to this, the toilet paper in England is very thin by nature. Yes or no?
You know what, guys? I'm used to the Dave Damashek football program where we really stick to football. so this kind of conversation to me is a little offbeat.
All right, fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there is something that, you know, that may be true.
Okay, so let's talk about the game a little bit. The Jets, of course, they were 2-0, and then they got beat by the Eagles at home. And the Dolphins, we don't know what's going on with the Dolphins. They played an absolute stink fest. And, Mark, you wrote a post on Wednesday, you know, highlighting how bad the defense looked in a loss to the Bills. And so you don't know what's going on with the Dolphins, if this is a team that's going down the toilet, to tie in with the toilet paper, if this is a situation where this is just a team that's floating into the abyss. As a Jets fan, I'd love that to be the truth. Mark, when you watched the Dolphins play on Sunday, what did you see?
Their defense, which I thought would be so disruptive before the season, looks disorganized to me. There's no identity to the defense, and they were facing a guy in Charles Clay who they practiced against hundreds of times, and on that first Bills drive, he just carved them up for like 60 yards, and then his final touchdown catch was one where, you know, we talked about, you know, guys like Eric Weddle and Dante Whitner missing tackles. What on earth was happening with the tackling with the Dolphins? How does Joe Philbin get out of here without being left in London? That's what I want to know.
Henry, where are you at on Joe Philbin?
I think I'm where every Dolphins fan is. You know, I was kind of scratching my head last year when he got given an extension at the end of the season. And, you know, the first three games, Mark talks about just, you know, the game against the Bills, which was bad. But I watched the win against the Redskins, which they really didn't look very good in either. And then obviously they lost to the Jags in week two. And there's nothing about the team that suggests that they're going to turn a corner at any point. In fact, you know, they always say that a team takes on the personality of their coach. And their coach has no personality, and so the team is kind of like just floating out there, really not good for anything.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead, Greg.
No, go.
No, I just think as far as this game goes, this is a wide open game. Would anything surprise you in this game? Would it surprise you if the Jets easily won? Would it surprise you if the Dolphins spanked the
No.
Jets, who might not be as good as they maybe seemed after 2 weeks? It wouldn't surprise me if this was a very close game. It can go in any direction, really.
It would surprise
me.
Yeah, I agree. If Tannehill connected on a series of deep balls, that would surprise me.
Right. He has the same issues where he's good up the seams, bad to the outside. And I think the problem is when you give him that much money that people have a certain expectation. But we know that he's not a quarterback that's going to raise all boats. And right now the offensive line is bad. The running game is bad. You know, the skill position players. I love Jarvis Landry, but it's like, he is the whole offense right now, and that's too much to put on Jarvis Landry.
You continue to disrespect Rashard Matthews.
All right, fine, Rashard Matthews, whatever. My point
is, you disrespect him as much as Joe Philbin did the last 3 years.
My point is that Tannehill's not going to overcome things, and I thought this defense was going to be great. You know what London needs, Henry, and I think you feel this as a you know, UK vet. They need some better games. I mean, they got that Falcons-Lions game last year. That was a great one. But there's been a lot of blowouts. Is this the game that makes the UK finally just fall in love with football?
Henry, have you ever been called a UK vet before?
I guess I am old, and I'm from the UK. So, I guess it makes sense.
Yeah,
I will hold that against Greg for a while, man.
What does that even mean? I was just struggling for the vocabulary. Citizen was probably what I was looking for.
But Henry is a company man. I've said to Henry many times that you know, Henry came from England, from the London NFL office, and he's quickly moved up the ranks. I believe that he will be commissioner one day if our country allows someone not from this country to be the commissioner of the NFL. I think
a couple hoops to jump through, but
a couple hoops, yeah. But I think he can
exactly do
it. Your thoughts, Henry, on the entire London experience for the NFL? Is it working? Put him on the spot.
I mean, there's no doubt it's working. There's more fans than ever. The games sell out. You know, the ambition of having a team here and having more games here is you know, it's very real. You know, in terms of, you were talking about the quality of the games, I think it's not that, you know, just because there are two not so great teams, and that's happened a few times over, doesn't necessarily mean that they've all been bad games. There have been some pretty good games played here, and the fans are definitely into it. I think there's kind of a suspicion that fans show up to the game and don't really know what's going on. And that might have been the case in 2007 when the Dolphins first came here and played against the Giants in the first International Series game. But the fans now are pretty savvy, and they know when they're not seeing good football. And you'll hear the boos, you know, especially given that the Dolphins have a lot of support in London. If they don't play well on Sunday, you know, it'll be like a home crowd, apart from they probably won't be able to leave the stadium because they don't get to see many football games.
That's actually that's an interesting point. Obviously, the Jaguars have poured a ton of resources and games into being a team that plays in London a lot. Are they the most popular team there?
No, the most popular team in the UK are the Patriots, just because they've been successful recently, and you know people like to support winners.
Come on,
unfortunately.
England.
Wait, do they care that like one of the cars over there, a Jaguar, is there's no tie-in
Jaguar
to that?
Jaguar.
Do they think that the dolphin animal is
not
a dolphin?
Same way,
is
but not Jaguar.
The Dolphins are one of the most popular teams there, though.
They absolutely are. Yeah.
Don't a lot of Brits vacation in Florida? Or holiday
that's
in Florida?
That's exactly why. You know, you came back and your uncle bought you a cap saying Miami Dolphins on, and you kind of became a Dolphins fan accidentally.
All right. So there he is, Henry Hodgson, the notorious DOP, the director of programming of the digital platform of NFL Media, which is, you know, he's an important guy. And I imagine when you go back to the London office, Henry, a lot of people are happy to see you. A hero's welcome. Maybe there's a receptionist that always harbored a crush for you. You're happily married, obviously, with children. But is there anything awkward with – because you are handsome and you are Americanized, and there is something sexy and glamorous about that.
Very tall, too.
No comment.
You feel like you don't really fit in either place. When you're here, you know –
a man without a country.
You know, you're the guy from the UK office. But now when you're home, you're noticing a difference. That you don't really feel quite at home there either.
This has become a confidence crisis all of a sudden for me that I need to go and think about.
All right. Sorry.
All right. Henry, thank you so much. I assume you're going to go to a pub now, but if you're responsible and you're going to bed, sweet dreams, buddy.
No, I'm going to go back to my warm beer and enjoy it.
All right, good. There you go.
All right.
Henry Hodgson.
See you guys.
They drink warm beer.
Well, they drink. They drink a lot of beer.
Well, you better hurry up. The bar's closed there early.
When I went to Ireland, the bartenders say, "Let me build you a beer," because it takes a while to pour it. Just the way.
I've been getting a lot of tweets. We are not all going to London, but Mark definitely is, and Connor. So if you see them, besiege them like the Beatles in A Hard Day's Night. Only on that
they're going to the Jaguars game. So that's four weeks away.
Late October.
We all picked the Jets except for Mark, who picked the Dolphins. Moving on.
I did.
Mark's struggling in the picks right now. Just so anybody
I'm getting
that's
absolutely crushed. I didn't even look at it last week, and I looked at it this week, and
well,
I am getting
all home
destroyed.
Teams. You work for the NFL.
Well,
you should use
again.
Your cognitive abilities.
Well,
you
it's
watch
not the same
tape.
Anymore.
I like that pick.
Well, that's true.
I think the Jets defense, they got no natural pass rush. The run defense isn't quite as good.
No,
are you saying you don't care anymore because it's not worth anything with the boss not involved?
I do care. I honestly thought if I picked home games from here to the end that I'd probably do just as well as anyone else.
So
but
this was a strategy?
Well, it wasn't true last week. But
well, it didn't. You got to stick with it.
So maybe, you know.
Maybe take all
who's the home team in London? That seems ridiculous. There's no.
Technically, the home team is the Dolphins.
That's a sham.
All right, moving on. The Houston Texans are traveling to Atlanta to face the Falcons. The Falcons at 3-0. Get excited, people of A-Town. The Texans, on the other hand, 1-2. They did
it's
get
not A-Town.
A-Town, yeah.
No, it's
according
not
to Usher, it's A-Town. Why? What is it? What is it?
It's not A-Town.
Hotlanta.
Yeah, you're telling me Hotlanta is better than A-Town?
I'm not
ATL.
Saying
ATL. People say ATL. Can I move on with the show?
Yes.
The Atlanta Falcons are undefeated after 3 weeks. The Texans got on the winning side of things. And, you know, when you pick games, sometimes you kind of talk yourself into certain things. But I cannot talk myself into any scenario where the quarterback led by my friend, the man I love, Ryan Mallett, almost forgot his name, will beat the team led by Matt Ryan right now. Right, Mark? There's no way.
I would have a real tough time making an argument for Houston in this game. I'm not going to. How about that? I'm not going to make an argument because I don't think they're going to win.
This would take a superhuman game from J.J. Watt. And is Arian Foster going to play? We don't know. It could be a game-time decision from what we're hearing.
Aren't the Texans learning you can't just win with just what J.J. Watt?
They know that,
though. Last week.
Well, not just because of him.
Do we really think there's that much of a difference between this Falcons team and the Texans? I've been as down as the Texans as anyone, and I had the Falcons making the playoffs before the season. But to me, they're both teams that are in the middle of the NFL.
And
on a certain day, it certainly wouldn't be a shock if the Texans can hang with them.
I would take Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, and Kyle Shanahan over anything happening with the Houston Texans.
Julio Jones, by the way, and Wes, as usual, did a great job with your latest rankings, positional rankings. I urge everyone to check that out. You have Julio Jones as the number one wide receiver in the NFL. He is on pace. This is awesome. Julio Jones is on pace, and he also is nicked up a little bit right now, but I'm sure he'll play. 181 catches, 2,346 yards, and 21 touchdowns. That's his pace right now.
Wouldn't it be funny if Thomas Dimitroff, after getting in trouble and having to surrender some of his duties, wins his third Executive of the Year award for this team? He hired a good coaching staff. The offensive line went from one of the worst in the league to an asset. They've got impact rookies in Vic Beasley and Tevin Coleman before his injury. There's some
who hired him?
Maybe Scott Pioli gets the job.
Well, what about Arthur? Didn't Arthur Blank essentially hire this guy?
That's a good point. That Dan Quinn had the most to say with his own coaching staff. And when you say better offensive line, that's Kyle Shanahan. That's the scheme. Because the players aren't really very different.
Dimitroff kept pouring early round picks into the offensive line, and the coaching staff could never develop them. The former coaching staff.
Well, that's what Shanahan's specialty, though.
A lot of those guys aren't even there, and now they have a running back. And that was one of my big takeaways from last week, was Devontae Freeman was awesome. I mean, he ran angry. He ran so hard, just like that sort of energy out of him. I was almost surprised to see how well
he
played.
For such a small guy, he's physical in like a Darren Sproles kind of way.
Yeah, even more, though. I mean, to the point where you can give him 25 carries in a game. We'll see if he holds up.
35 touches last week.
He was outstanding. If you're getting him as a big-time back, that offense is even more.
One thing for the Texans, keep an eye on. Jadeveon Clowney's turned into a player. He's making more of an impact every week.
You really think this will be close, potentially?
Oh, all I'm saying is I don't think the Falcons are some huge favorites because they're 3-0 and the Texans are 1-2. To me, these are two teams in the kind of the middle of the NFL. And, yeah, I think it'll be a good game.
I agree.
We all have the Falcons, but we shall see how close it is. Next up, the New York Giants. They got their first win of the season. Kind of an underwhelming victory over the Redskins at the Meadowlands. Now they travel to Orchard Park to face the Buffalo Bills, Rex Ryan's team, revitalized under old Rexy, really just bullied the Dolphins in Miami on Sunday. So they're at 2-1, one game behind the Pats, the Giants at 1-2. Mark, I'll start with you on this one. Your thoughts on the Bills right now, where are you at with Tyrod Taylor through three games?
Well, watching the game from last week, I think that the marriage between Taylor and Greg Roman has been ultra successful. And we can talk about Kyle Shanahan. That was a great hire that has changed that Falcons team. I feel the same way for Greg Roman and Buffalo.
OC talk with Mark Sessler.
Well, because this is what Rex Ryan never had. He never had a guy that's, you go do what you do, Rex Ryan, and let Greg Roman handle developing a mobile quarterback. Tyrod Taylor.
But that's Rex Ryan's fault, to be clear. He handpicked those guys. He wanted Tony Sparano.
You're not gonna.
Like, I want someone who limits my offense.
That season never happened.
I'm not going to hold back on criticizing Rex Ryan. Right. I mean, I totally hear you. But bottom line, he did hire a good coordinator this time. Yes. I think it's working out. The Bills had two of the fastest guys on the field last week, and Sammy Watkins and Percy Harvin, with the Next Gen Stats column that Wes does every week. Two of the fastest dudes, and I think that they've got weapons on offense. We know about the defense, and they're great at home. They're a load to deal with.
What surprises me in watching all three Bills games is that Percy Harvin has been so much better than Sammy Watkins. Yeah. Harvin has been very good for the Bills this year. He's been easily their number one receiver.
You know, it's funny from your rankings, Wes, that I saw Percy Harvin sneak into the honorable mention category, and I was like, I was very surprised to see that, but now
in Daryl Bevel in Seattle, it was all this, we can't figure out how to use Percy Harvin. He's hard to put into an offense with a mobile quarterback and a ground game that's exactly what Buffalo is, and Greg is getting the job done.
And yes, they're hitting him on third and longs. I mean, Taylor's been really impressive. If you would have said going into the season, I mean, their whole question was, we can't really trust that offense because of Tyrod Taylor. They're third in the league in scoring. Some of that was catching up on the Patriots, but this was a Bills team that in the past could have never caught up in that type of matchup. I mean, they are one of the highest scoring teams in the league, and they've done it with virtually nothing from Sammy Watkins, very little from Robert Woods.
And nothing from LeSean
McCoy.
LeSean McCoy,
too.
And they're still scoring that many points. It's crazy.
It's funny to look at the Giants. They pour money into Rashad Jennings. They pour money into Shane Vereen. And the best running back on the field in this game will be a fifth-round rookie for the Bills, Carlos Williams.
Shady McCoy and Sammy Watkins both likely out of this game with injuries. Victor Cruz who threw himself a the return party about a month ago, re-injured his or aggravated his calf injury at practice on Wednesday. He's out indefinitely. Who knows when we're going to see him? So they're both sides have injuries. And Wes, how about your boy, ODB? He's kind of in the background a little bit of some wide receivers like A.J. Green and Julio Jones getting all the headlines. Having a nice 200-yard game from ODB, just to remind everyone that he is a transformational talent.
I like the way you're thinking, because the NFL somehow gifted Ronald Darby the Defensive Rookie of the Month award. He hasn't played as well as Marcus Peters. I don't know how that happened.
Mm. That is a good combination. Gilmore, who's not fully healthy, and Darby, who has played well. I mean, that defense is great. It when Jerry Hughes, talk about executive of the year, maybe give it to Doug Whaley. Think about the people that he's brought in. Carlos Williams, Percy Harvin. Jerry Hughes is looking like one of the best re-signings.
These are all Rex Ryan moves.
Whatever. Give it to Rex Ryan then. I'm saying their offseason is looking pretty good.
Back from the brink.
Richie Incognito, I hate to say it, is having
another Rex Ryan move.
Pretty big impact on that.
Yeah.
We all picked the Bills bullish on Buffalo. Like what I did there?
That was very smooth, Dan. It's a masterclass.
Next up, the Oakland Raiders. Yeah, get excited, people that inhabit the black hole. You're 2-1, and now you get to go to Chicago to face the Bears, who might be the worst team in football or very close to it. Do we have to deal with Jimmy Clausen for another week?
It looks like it. Jay Cutler says day to day, which is way earlier than anyone expected him to have a chance to play, but looks like it.
They punted 9 times, I believe, in 9 possessions last week. So the 10 for 10. 10 for 10. The Raiders are in a great position to go 3-1. And we talked about this a little earlier in the week, Chris Wessling, that the Raiders are in a great position right here. Will they be able to capitalize on it?
I would have thought about taking the Bears in this game if Jay Cutler was playing, but there's just nothing I've ever seen from Jimmy Clausen. One of the most amazing stats this week is that he's, I believe, played in 16 games and started 12 and never had a 200-yard game in the NFL, which is very hard to do. 12 games without a 200-yard performance.
It's not even good.
I mean,
200 yards
is good. That's very hard to be that bad. It's like trying to go in 16.
That's terrible.
It does help to get Jeffrey back, but why would the Bears treat this game a whole lot differently than last week when they
just. So you're saying they're not going to try to win?
Well, they're going to try to win. They're not playing the Seahawks this week in Seattle. That is the toughest ask, especially against an 0-2 team.
Yeah.
This Raiders defense isn't that good, but it is balanced. I mean, it's got an okay defense. They can run the ball. They can definitely.
Their secondary is a tire fire.
That's true.
But their front seven, the defense, like the score in the Seattle game, it's just when you're going to do nothing on offense, it's
Martellus
not gonna...
Bennett might go for 300 yards in this game.
I thought
Gary
the defense
Barnage
played
got him
well.
For 100.
Wait, should our fantasy team, Milana Weintraub, which is 3-0, most points in the league, should we put in Martellus this week?
Well, think about who the Raiders have gone against this year. Tyler Eifert got him for his best game ever. Gary Barnage got him for his best game ever. And Crockett Gilmore got him for his best game ever in the 3 games that the Raiders
have
played.
This is why I brought Weston as a consultant. Now, I brought him in as a draft consultant, gave him 4% ownership of Milana Weintraub.
Well, actually, I brought him in to get out.
And
I gave him money. I paid him $1 to do
true.
It
Mark
so that I wouldn't have to do it. So
Mark is an 18%
And let the record show, I stood on the table for Larry Fitzgerald.
Stood on the table for Larry, and we drafted him, and he's paid amazing dividends. So Milana Weintraub, who, by the way, is the AT&T girl in those commercials that we Mark and I have had teams for 3 or 4 years. It's always a different woman that we – a woman. It's like all of a sudden I turned into Christopher Walken. A different woman.
Well,
Mark Sessler.
You know, some people might perceive that to be relatively creepy. I'm essentially out of the organization. I collect money if we win.
You are very much a part of the organization.
That's
an 18% share.
Mark backpedaling away, distancing himself from Dan.
I couldn't name three people on that fantasy team.
Mark, you've been connected with a loser football team your entire life. And now you have a chance to be connected to a potentially historic champion, and you're running from it? What does that say?
A bunch of people mishmashed together on paper.
What does it say, buddy?
I don't need – well.
We all picked the Raiders, by the
way.
Let
Greg speak to that.
What?
What?
Greg's theory on group-owned fantasy teams is is bold.
Well, what?
What?
Well, it's a ridiculous thing to have more
of course
than
it's ridiculous.
Owner.
That's the fun of it. And how about the results?
You haven't done well in this league in general.
No, I'm talking about this season. I restructured ownership. I downplayed Mark's. He's like the Howie Roseman of our team.
I love this.
I put him in a different office.
I love how Dan reorganized this when I had to convince Dan to let me out of this.
Talk to me at the end of the season.
Okay.
You know, you don't get anything for a 3-0 start in a made up league.
I got you. But no, the restructure, Mark was taken out of the personnel thinking.
Took himself out.
And I brought Wes in, who was a draft day consultant and my consigliere on some point, on some level. That's where we're at right now.
I exited because of the false narratives that pop up during the year, and you're experiencing that right now. What? I pulled myself out of this and couldn't have been happier
about it. This is your chance to be a champion, Mark. Don't let go.
This sounds very similar to the types of decisions, you know, Phil Emery was making in Chicago. That's why everyone got bounced last year.
Just you can't argue with results so far. The Raiders, I don't know if this has ever happened. The Around the NFL team, we all believe the Raiders will win.
On the road, too, after.
On the road.
I think they had.
Playing in Chicago, if they get down to. I mean, this is a good place to play.
But they had that long road.
They're
going to
lay an egg, aren't they?
This is an egg.
I don't think so. I think they're going to stay aggressive, but you never know.
Next up, the Kansas City Chiefs, who could not hang with the Packers, do not believe the 38-28 final score. That game was not as close as that. The Chiefs were overmatched, and now they got to go to Cincinnati, and that's rough. They've played three straight undefeated teams, haven't they?
Well, you're always going to play one in the first week, but yeah.
The Chiefs?
No, yeah, the Chiefs. They got beat by – well, that are undefeated
Well, and then
now.
The Broncos. You're
geniuses.
Right. And the Broncos.
You guys are stupid. They've beaten the Broncos.
I got it.
The Packers, and now well, – they've been beaten by the Broncos, Packers, and now the Bengals. Those teams are all undefeated. Children.
They got a rough schedule out of the gate. I mean, I just want to see with the Bengals. All right, everyone's waiting for the Andy Dalton – the other side of the coin.
Not you. You've bought in.
Well, that's why I haven't bought in entirely. But
Here's the thing. Not true.
What I think though is that Andy Dalton is looking much more confident than he ever has before. I think he's got the best play caller he's ever had.
The same.
Well, I'm not saying his looks.
He's playing more confident.
He's playing with more confidence,
Make
more comfortable.
He's going deep down the field.
He threw the ball downfield. He had like six or seven throws of over 25 yards last week or over 20 yards. That, to me, is what the difference is. And, you know, the Chiefs secondary, we'll see.
His numbers, by the way, 61 of 92. That's a 66.3 percentage completion, 866 yards, 9.4 yards average per completion, 8 touchdowns, just one pick, been sacked just once. And a 121 pass.
But doesn't that mean last year's Dalton goes out and throws four interceptions and has people, you know, melting?
But we thought that last week, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
last year's Dalton didn't have Marvin Jones and Tyler Eifert.
I mean, last week's Dalton had a fumble return for a touchdown and an interception in the end zone. People don't talk about. But the difference
but he
was
came
that he
back.
Kept going,
right.
Kept throwing deep, and finished out the game unbelievably strong.
I don't like what I saw from the Chiefs on Monday. I know they were in a very tough spot. But, yeah, we talked about it a lot in our last show about the way the offense moved. I don't see them going on the road here and beating a very good Bengals team. Just can't see it.
I like their defense. I think it's the toughest matchup Cincinnati's offense has had so far. But I don't know how they're going to score. The Bengals defense is playing really well, too. Geno Atkins is a different player. It's like they suddenly got Geno Atkins back, one of the best defensive tackles in the league. Pecco's making a lot of plays for him. The whole defensive line, they have a lot of players, and they just rotate them in and out. Everyone gave Mike Zimmer all the credit for that defensive line over the years, but it's really continued. It's a lot better right now.
Leon Hall, too, who was, you know, a candidate, some people believe, to get cut over the summer and maybe move to safety, has been their best cornerback.
And Adam Jones is getting it done.
He had a great game last week.
If you had told me 10 years ago that Adam Jones would be one of the guys still left from that 2005 class, was it? I mean, and still going strong and playing well, no one would have believed it.
Over-under, Andy Dalton is awarded a PFF score of greater than 0.08 for this game.
Who knows?
Who knows? Just roll the dice.
Over.
Pick anything out of a hat. Any number. You'll be just as likely.
Question for the revolutionary fantasy minds in the room, Wes, Greg.
What about Mark?
What's up, Mark?
How you doing? Glad to be here.
Are you,
about to walk out.
If you are a Jeremy Hill fantasy owner, are you nervous that things have taken a turn that he will not be recovering from as a fantasy entity?
Of course you are. Anytime your players aren't meeting the expectations you have for them, you have to be nervous.
I'd buy low, though. I think he'd be a guy to take a shot on if someone wants to panic and trade him.
The thing with Jeremy Hill, though, before the season, I thought he was going to be inconsistent because he's going to be a back where they need to have a lead in order for him to put up huge. And they've 3-0, and he hasn't done much.
Do we like him better in cold weather, though? Is sure, Cincinnati yeah. goes from September into October, November?
Interestingly, yeah. and Hill got benched for fumbling issues in week two, they both have exactly 41 carries. Bernard averaging 5.7 yards a carry, Hill 3.0. We all have the – what do we have? We have the Bengals except for Connor Orr. Connor is a real
I like
maverick.
Connor. He'll just do what he feels like.
And he's having a nice season so far, 29-19.
Is that something you wish you could do more often?
What?
Really, if you don't care,
games?
Why don't you get a little more, you know?
Well, didn't I get a little more
onions.
Bizarre last week picking all home teams?
No, I mean
going
more like
4 and 15.
Onion hanging rather than just picking the home teams.
Well, if I stink up the joint again, I'm going to have to start getting wild. And that's how you really go down the tubes.
Yeah, I've been there.
So this could be a record-setting, ugly campaign on my part, and I'm going to have to shut down emotionally.
All right, next up, as we continue to roll through the early games on Sunday, the Jacksonville Jaguars. They are heading to Indianapolis to face the Colts. Here's the biggest thing you need to know about this game is that Andrew Luck, for the second straight day on Thursday, was limited in practice with a right shoulder injury he suffered in Sunday's 35-33 win over the Titans. Everyone's downplaying it. Luck says he's definitely playing. Pagano says he has, quote, and this is kind of a weird thing to say, supreme confidence that Luck will play on Sunday. But at the same time, he's been a bystander at practice for 2 days, and shoulders are no joke, Greg.
They are no joke. Maybe it explains a little bit of his struggles. Wes was saying as far back as week one that he didn't think Luck was
Pagano says that the injury happened week three. I'm not saying that it is or not. That's what he said. It did not happen before.
Well, they're going to say that because he just is on the injury report now. But coaches always admit to the fact that they lie about their quarterback's health once they get to the offseason, or it comes out that they've been lying. So maybe that helps explain it. The biggest problem Andrew Luck has had, though, has been poor decisions in his offensive line. It hasn't been arm strength. It's been him really last week against Tennessee, for instance. I thought he played a really solid game overall. He just made two really bad decisions on those interceptions.
Well, he's holding the ball too long, too. And I do think he's been throwing the ball with less authority going back to the first game of the year. But this game, I think it's a really bad matchup for the Jaguars because, you know, their offense is basically Allen Robinson and T.J. Yeldon right now. And Allen Robinson, as good as he is with the big catch radius and leaping ability, he struggles to separate from good corners. I imagine Vontae Davis will be on him. And then Yeldon, the Colts' run defense is only averaging 3.7 yards per carry this year, which is a major improvement from last year when they were 4.3. And they've got Henry Anderson and David Perry, these rookies who are really plugging the run well. I think that basically shuts down Jacksonville's offense.
T.J. Yeldon hasn't excited me. He's been exactly what I expected, kind of a run of the mill, not going to get you beat, but not anyone to get excited about.
He's got quicker feet than I expected for a big runner, but he doesn't have big playability.
3.2 yards of carry. So
and we look at Blake Bortles, you got to chalk up some of his issues that he's had behind that terrible line. Isn't that also affect the ground game?
We seem to make a lot of excuses for Blake.
Sure.
No line has been as bad other than the Bucs.
Well, I think they've been a little bit better this year overall. I mean, they played great, I would say, in week two against Miami. Maybe that was just the matchup. I mean, I think you'll see a lot more of Frank Gore. My boy, the inconvenient truth.
Yeah.
You can just keep writing him off, and you can put him in Indianapolis. He's getting older. He's still looks
pretty
good.
He's like the inconvenient mostly true right now.
Yeah.
He's looked
he also
good.
Had to leave he the first good. Game because he was old. But he could get 30 carries, especially
but
if Luck is
they had
far
some,
off.
They had some moments. I'm wondering how they come out of that game, if they're going to be a different team, kind of be the team that we've seen the last couple of years, because it was an inspiring win. It was a great victory that they fell down 27-14, and they do a 98-yard drive starting with 12 minutes to go in the game, down 13 points. That's an amazing point in the season where you absolutely need something. You're down by 13. They do a 98-yard drive. One of the plays, and that's why they got Frank Gore on this team, was a 3rd-and-1 in the middle of that drive where he got hit in the backfield. He bounced off the tackler, and he dove for the first down to keep that drive going. A couple plays later, 3rd-and-20 from the 30, they hit a touchdown to come back. I mean, that was a gutsy, like, you could see why Pagano was so excited. It was an amazing win. I think it's the game of the year so far.
Still no timetable, by the way. Well, that was good. Not everything needs
I watched
to be delved
it live
in further.
I didn't think it was even the game of the week.
Really?
The Colts played terrible for 3.5 quarters.
I don't think so. They're up 14. How many games do you see a 2-touchdown lead by both teams blown? And then Mariota, I thought, was playing great. Luck, when they absolutely needed to, made plays with kind of their season on the line. I thought there was a lot of drama.
You have no Mariota? Excuses if you're the Colts Mariota. To not correct your season. Outside of the Patriots, the Jaguars, the Texans, the Saints, and the Panthers are your next four games.
Where'd you get that research packet?
It's just called online.
It
you get it in your
I
email.
Got no,
you get
I
it in your,
no
email.
Comes in your email
every
like,
week you've
right.
ever worked here.
I like the physical version.
I'm glad you haven't found your
You have a printer. Your computer is also attached to a printer.
No timetable on Julius Thomas still, by the way. The surgery is 1 month ago today. He's supposed to be back in a month. Has not been cleared. Everything goes wrong for the Jaguars at all times. Moving on. And we all picked the Colts. Moving on. The Carolina Panthers are 3-0, another undefeated team. And now they get to play the Bucs on the road. Tampa Bay is 1-2. So this is a game where you would think the Panthers are again Greg Rosenthal in good position to continue to build on what's been a very nice start for a team that has won 2 straight division titles and has gone in for 3.
It's crazy how every week it feels like they're in one of the worst games of the week. How does that keep happening? I guess that's a good thing, though. If you're the Panthers, you keep winning. Cam Newton last week was protected absolutely perfectly. I mean, the Saints didn't get anywhere near him, and he's just throwing bombs down the field. Very sharp. I liked how aggressive they were. That was what I liked about the Bills game. They were very aggressive in the second half with the lead, which is funny because Rex whined about it when the Patriots did it. And the Panthers were very aggressive once they took the lead over the Saints to keep passing, which is good to see out of Ron Rivera.
I mean, Greg Olsen, what he had, like a monster game against the Saints, and that has a lot to do with the New Orleans secondary, but he's had a great year so far.
Luke Kuechly is still not practicing, by the way. He had that concussion, so don't expect to see him. And Jared Allen will make his Panthers debut in this game.
Did you guys notice anything different with Cam's throwing motion?
No, but I'm not a scout. I mean, I never get into all that.
They spent all offseason talking about his footwork, and I've noticed no difference there, but his deep ball is now being thrown side-armed with a hump on it.
What?
He's throwing sidearms for his deep balls.
The old sidearm hump.
It seems to me like it's giving him a lot more touch. He's not just trying to throw bullets 40 yards downfield. Mm. He's throwing sidearms, and it's got a little bit of a hump on it.
Is it helping with the chronic overthrows?
It is. It's absolutely helping him add some timing to these passes where he's throwing the ball up and letting his receivers run under the ball.
He's watching some old Bernie Kosar.
So you're saying these offseason stories that we wrote are not totally useless?
No, what I'm saying is they talked about his footwork, and it's got nothing to do with his footwork. It's all arm angle. It's sidearmed. He's throwing the ball sidearmed on deep passes.
He had just about a perfect game last week.
That was the best I've seen him throw deep probably in his career.
They barely had the ball in the first half. The Saints executed their game plan perfectly, just kept it away from the Panthers to the point that the Panthers had to score every time they got the ball, and they basically did. They scored, I think, 5 of their 6 first 7 possessions.
We all
remember the pass down the seam to Greg Olsen where he throws it right over the defender. Olsen gets it with one hand. It's perfect ball placement, and that's something he couldn't do with his old throwing motion.
We all took the Panthers in that game. Moving on, the Philadelphia Eagles finally got in the win column against the Jets, and now they head to Washington to face the Redskins. So let's see what we have here. DeMarco Murray, a full participant in practice on Thursday. He had that hamstring issue, so you could put him back in the backfield, see what they figure out how to do. And, you know, I wrote a post today, Thursday, about Chip Kelly, who was asked in a press conference what happened to all the big plays. And explosive plays, I think, was the wording. And Kelly said the reason why, because the Eagles led the NFL in explosive plays in 2013. And then overall, over the first 2 years that he was the coach, they led the league in that category. This year, they are 24th, I believe. And he gave kind of an answer that made sense. But at the same time was a little underwhelming. He said, well, it's because now teams play us differently on defense. They play us, the cornerbacks and safeties, they play off 10 yards on us. So they've taken that away from us. So we have to react to the way
well,
they
you,
play us.
You also don't have DeSean Jackson.
Right? And there's no DeSean Jackson and there's no LeSean McCoy for the big running plays. But to my response to that is, well, listen, and I joke around like, oh, you're the genius, Chip Kelly. But if you really are this offensive mastermind, isn't there a way to manipulate defenses and take advantage of them giving you too much space underneath? Something's not adding up with that answer.
His reputation is not just that he has this offensive system. It's that he adjusts to what people are doing against him, and he's always thinking of new ways to beat defenses.
And unless you're saddled with Sam Bradford, who his numbers when he throws beyond 10 yards are abysmal.
Well, that was my first thought when I heard this, the story that Dan wrote, that he's just protecting his quarterback.
I mean, that's why you're not going to get a fully honest answer. I mean, Bradford is – I don't know what happened to the dude we saw in the preseason. That was a very small sample size.
He threw 10 passes that really made
That's fair.
And
but
also,
we all
talk about it all the time in the preseason. The
literally
defenses
10.
Don't really
but he looked
defense.
Great, though.
It
he
was more
different.
About where he was putting the ball.
Right, but it was just 10 passes.
Right.
That's fair.
I wonder, coming off that last game, more about Sam Bradford – than I did the week before. Because the week before seemed so crazy bad that it was a fluke. But Bradford was terrible against the Jets. I mean, he was the worst. Ryan Fitzpatrick was better in that game, and Ryan Fitzpatrick was not good. Bradford was not accurate at all. I know the box score would have looked better if the running backs had caught a couple passes. You mentioned that, Dan, and that's true. But for the most part, out of the 25, whatever passes it was, he was off target on almost all of them. And some easy throws, too.
I think it's very possible that this game is my game of the week because I think the Redskins can come out of this clearly as the better team of these two.
Well, I was going to say, there was a lot of positive Redskins talk going into Thursday night, and they did not play a good game at all.
Thursday night games are weird, but you're right. They didn't
play well. Does that take away any of the confidence that was building within this room about how good the Redskins can be?
Sure. I mean, I thought their Week 2 game was the most complete game I've seen maybe any team play this year. They thoroughly outclassed the Rams, and then they come back the next week, and Kirk Cousins looked like he doesn't have enough arm strength to throw a touchdown.
I feel the same about Kirk Cousins that I've always felt, which is I have very little faith. I think he's a poor man's Dalton, where he's going to have a total stinker every 3 weeks, but he's not even as good as Dalton on a week-to-week basis.
Yeah, I mean, the Redskins, for me, it can't come down to Kirk Cousins throwing the ball 35 times. It has to be what we did see against the Rams, which was Matt Jones, Alfred Morris, 1-2 punch that's going to beat you up, and both lines dominated that game. That's not what happened against the Giants, so that's concerning.
Mark and Wes both took the Redskins in this game. The rest of the crew...
That's not good news for Wes.
Greg. Took the Eagles. All right, it's that time of the show. He sits in between Wes and the old Zeuser. He is the host of the Around the NFL TV show. He is the great Andrew Siciliano. Welcome back to the show, Andrew.
Happy to be here, guys. Back up. You call yourself the great Zeuser?
The old Zeuser.
The old Zeuser.
That's what. How long, Andrew, did it take for you to start speaking about yourself in the third person?
As a gigantic mythological god.
It hasn't happened yet. I'll let you know if and when it does.
Okay.
Listen, let's stay on topic. Andrew is here, and we love to have Andrew here. And he
like
just actually 5 days a week, the Around the NFL TV show, at what time? I always get it wrong.
Stop, Dan. You got to know it by now.
I got
2 o'clock every day Easter.
Tweets last week about this that you couldn't remember. 2 o'clock, 2 o'clock on Thursdays Eastern on game day because Thursday is game day on NFL Network. Every other day, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, it is at 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. normal time.
See, I get tripped up by the time zones.
6 p.m. normal.
So do I.
Or Eastern, as they call it.
Gotcha. Uh-huh. And on today's show, on Thursday's show, you had Seahawks star Michael Bennett.
Yes.
Nice conversation with him, from what I understand.
One of my favorite knuckleheads in all of football. And I mean that in a very endearing way. He is awesome. A, he's good at football. B, he showed up to start the interview with an arm full of trophies. He gave himself a trophy of some kind for beating his brother. So he's the best brother, and he wanted Martellus to see it. You know, they shut out the Bears last week. And then he had like 5 Emmys. Emmys, I guess, that he took out of the cabinet in the building in Seattle that the Seahawks had for local coverage or something. Like, hey, local TV. So he had, honestly, we have a shot of it somewhere, an arm full of Emmys. And that's how he came on the air with all the trophies.
You are aware that Michael Bennett and the old Zeuser, a little bit of a fractured past.
Listen. How do you anger that guy?
Well...
Talk to him after he just lost the Super Bowl.
Super Bowl Sunday.
The game.
He was on the riser. You know, I asked him a perfectly normal question about, you know, what was the vibe, the shock after the Butler interception, and his response and listeners of the show know this, so I don't like to talk about it, but I will bring it up again. His response was about as big as a surprise as when your wife first saw your fill in the blank.
And then he added,
I don't remember.
Because it's small.
Oh yeah. He then offered the clarification because it's small.
That's awesome.
I find him to be classless. I've told him
at
Moses Fred. That's a horrible Twitter handle.
He certainly hit you below the belt.
Quite literally.
Yes.
And I'm waiting for the apology. Martellus or Michael? I'm not even sure.
It's Michael. And at the end of our interview today, because he was cracking,
did he talk about your junk?
He did not. He was cracking me up, and I said
funny
to him,
guy.
Michael, please don't ever change. And he said goodbye by saying, I'm always smiling. I'm in America. I'm black, and I'm rich. So I love that guy.
Isn't he cute?
I love that guy.
He's got that apology to Dan in his Twitter drafts folder.
It's coming eventually. If they make the
he
Super
has
Bowl.
No idea who you are.
The Zeuser has a
if they make the Super Bowl.
The Zeuser has a long memory.
And don't forget things.
He has no clue you exist.
I am coming after him. You heard me, Michael Bennett. I'm coming after you. All right, so Andrew Siciliano is here, and that means we're going to get into some more games because Andrew's a man, an encyclopedia of knowledge. The brain is at another level.
I get it all from you guys at the Around the NFL Twitter feed.
You're like the guy from Limitless.
What's Limitless?
It's a guy who takes a pill and then has all the knowledge in the world.
Wait, I've actually seen that.
It's a good movie.
I can't believe I've seen one of the movies you've referenced.
It's, what's his name, Bradley Cooper, like an under-the-radar movie. Now it's a bad CBS show, but whatever.
I'd rather be Scarlett Johansson in that movie where she's slowly using more and more of her brain until the part where
her?
She's super...
Horse Whisperer.
Ghost
World.
No.
That was a great
one. It wasn't Lucy either, but she was great in Lucy. It was the one that was out last year, and then she uses all her brain, and then Morgan Freeman's the professor, and then everything blows up at the end.
Yeah, that is Horse Whisperer.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah.
Johansson, by the way, is...
I'd rather you were Scarlett Johansson, too.
Can I name drop? So I met her years ago. I tower over her.
Wow.
Really?
And I'm 5'7 with shoes. And by the way, I don't care. She's awesome.
Yes, she is.
Yes.
Moving on.
No argument from the group.
Moving on. Let's talk about
perfection, and let's talk about some football. The Cleveland Browns. We'll start right there because we know Andrew has Cleveland roots, and we know Mark Sessler used to have Cleveland leanings. Andrew, in fact, is called Mark a coward.
I took it back.
I'm in the mix. We'll
get into that in a second, where you are with that. But the Cleveland Browns are 1-2. They had a home loss to the Raiders, which really
was predictable.
Was your brother there, by the way, Andrew?
No, my dad was. He gave tickets to Dad.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
My dad called it, and I'm not exaggerating, although he is prone to hyperbole, the worst display of professional football I've ever seen.
Okay, so that's where the Browns are at in 2015, same as they were before, basically. Now they got to travel to SoCal. They're going to face the Chargers, a 1-2 Chargers team that – a little bit disappointing, but you would think there's going to be an advantage in this week against a Browns team, which, let's face it, is not very good. Andrew, what are you taking away from this game? What do you see? Do the Browns have a shot?
Of course they have a shot because they have had moments of defensive glory this year. Granted, they've been fleeting. I'm just hoping Brian Sipe will show up as he is a Browns legend, the 1980 NFL MVP, and I believe he still coaches in San Diego.
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. Okay. So that would be cool. The story this week in Cleveland has been, is TMZ right? Or did TMZ, I'm dead serious. I hate to give them the credit here, but I don't know if it's credit, but that's what people have been talking about. Did they make up quotes with three players claiming they supported Johnny Manziel? That's all anybody is talking about.
Step in one thing. TMZ is not a bastion of journalistic integrity, but it is not known as a place that makes up stories.
Wait a minute. I'm not here to again bash TMZ, but for Pete's sake, they had a Michael Sam story a couple of months ago where when you clicked it, it claimed he said one thing. He absolutely didn't say anything like that and had to issue a press release saying, I never said that. Watch the video. It's clear I never said that. Ever.
These are sources inside the Browns.
Well, would it be surprising or would it be even weird if three people, especially young players on that team, didn't? Of course, a few people in the locker room want Johnny Manziel. We have no idea if that's the majority or what.
And that's what I'm trying to get to. who it's expected that there are going to be people that think the other guy should play. You don't think there are people that last week, even though this sounds absurd, thought that Blaine Gabbert should play the second half against the Cardinals? I guarantee you at least one. You think there are anybody in Philadelphia that wants Mark Sanchez to play?
Yes.
I guarantee you there are.
Well, and so unless you have a franchise quarterback, some of the locker room is going to want the other guy to play.
Exactly.
And this was telling. I talked to Wes a little bit about this Browns game, and he officially has given up on Josh McCown.
I'm out on
the only
Josh
defender
McCown.
Of Josh McCown in America. That was a rough performance he had.
I told you I was out on him in the preseason when I realized he was just going to get injured because he's so careless with his body.
You know what might have been worse, though, than Josh McCown, and they got off to a terribly slow start, was a defense, two things. Hayden is not healthy and is having struggles, and he's going to have struggles against Keenan Allen this weekend. They missed like 14 tackles.
That's exactly the number.
They missed 14 tackles. This was meant to be the strength of this team, and it was absolutely the opposite last week.
The Raiders' offensive line against the Cleveland pass rush was the most dominant performance I've seen out of any offensive line this season. The Browns' defense looked totally inept.
And their run defense, which was, we got Danny Shelton, we're going to shore this thing up, is giving up like 40, 50 yards more per game than they were last year.
Because a lot of those missed tackles. I watched, I think, the first three quarters last night before the oven told me I was burning dinner. And two things.
Peek behind the curtain.
Two things. Dante Whitner and Jordan Poyer both had a lot of trouble with missed tackles to the point where Pettine today, as we tape this Thursday, was asked, are you thinking of sitting him down? Mm. That is Dante Whitner. and the other thing, too, is on the right side of that offensive line, friend of the program, Jeff Schwartz, I don't mean to bash the brother, Mitchell Schwartz did not have a good game. And even when they gave him help with a fullback, I mean, there are a couple of plays where Khalil Mack bought his plane ticket to the Pro Bowl week three. And you know,
Schwartz of 2 years ago.
Well, this is the ultimate matchup of a terrible pass rush, apparently, against what I think is the worst offensive line in football in San Diego.
And none of those guys, and they're all hurt, too.
Anecdotally, they're injured. Five drives last week ended on third down for the Chargers when they had absolutely no chance to protect Rivers. Anecdotally, I thought, this has to be the worst offensive line in the league. And I went and looked at our friends PFF, and they did have them overall as the worst offensive line, run block and pass block.
I think also with the Chargers this week, I found it unnecessary. But Philip Rivers was asked on the podium last Sunday, does the locker room still have faith in Mike McCoy? I can't believe we're there already, but the fact that anyone is even asking that in San Diego, look, it could just be one clown. I don't even know who asked it, but I can't imagine. I think the Chargers, they get back to it this week. Yeah.
If the Browns get the doors blown off, and I don't care
they're
if McCown plays.
They're not getting the doors
plays,
blown off.
No, or not. If they get beat and it's 24-10 or something.
Okay.
And whether McCown plays well or not, I don't get why Manziel wouldn't be starting at 1-3.
You clearly have going to nowhere. Because, number one, you've at that point discovered, all right, the season is a wash, and we go into another offseason, we're drafting a quarterback or finding a quarterback.
Yeah,
because
find out.
You got to find out. I don't.
Your
no
season's not a wash at 1-3.
It is close. If you're the Cleveland Browns. What are they going to do?
But McCown's not going to be the guy that's going to lead you back from 1-3 to 10-6. He's just not going to be that guy.
These are two different issues. I agree with you. They probably should go to Manziel. I disagree that the season's a wash at 1-3.
Not if you're the 1-3 Ravens. If you're the 1-3 Browns, what's the DNA that tells you to climb back
in? The 1-3 Ravens have no deep threat. They have their first round pick getting his knee scoped and can't run the ball.
We shall see. We all picked the Chargers there. Moving on, the St. Louis Rams, Big Ben gets hurt and they're in their building and the Rams still can't find a way to win. So they're 1-2 now. And anybody that has belief in the Rams, and Greg, I know you've been a believer. And perhaps you still are, but that was disconcerting. They fell to 1-2. Now they got to go to Arizona to face the Cardinals. They're playing as well as anyone, the Patriots included right now, 3-0, just killed the Niners. The worst beating in that matchup in the history of the two teams, a 47-7 win. So now the Rams have to put up on a big spot on the road. And Wes and Greg, if you believe in the Rams, they got to do something here. They got to put up a fight, and it'd be nice to see them win a game.
Yeah, I'm fascinated to see this game because it's a great matchup, at least when the Cardinals are on the field. As much as we love the Cardinals, who are now the official team of the Around the NFL podcast.
We're the highest scoring team in football.
They have had,
because we saw that coming.
They have had the easiest schedule you could basically come up with to this point, especially against defenses. So I'm looking forward to seeing them against this St. Louis defense, which ultimately executed their game plan against Pittsburgh. I mean, the defense gave up 12 points. It was going to be 9 points through three quarters with Ben Roethlisberger on the field. And I think the Rams can be frisky. As bad as they can be and disappointing, like when they go to Washington, they're good in the division, and I think they're a tough out each week. Even if it only adds up to 7 or 8 wins in the end, I think they can knock off good teams like the Cardinals.
I'm with you, and I'm sorry. Go ahead, Chris.
What happened the last time the Rams went on the road?
The Redskins
owned their soul.
Yep, that's
that was one of the most complete beatdowns. That was one of the most complete beatdowns I've seen all year.
That's both, like, sides of the ball.
Like, I reach into your heart and pull out your beating. Yeah,
there's nothing about this Rams team that makes me think they're going to be competitive in this game on the road.
I think they'll be competitive because I think their defense will keep it competitive. I think the most disappointing thing about last week is that, again, like we said the week before, you have a big test in Washington. You fail that test. You come back home. Look, Lance Kendricks, you had a touchdown, buddy. You don't drop that ball. It's a different game if he doesn't. Granted, he did. And then Nick Foles in the end with a chance again. They get the ball back, and Foles airmails it, I think, on the first play of the drive and gets picked off. They are getting after the quarterback early in the season this year, which is something they did not do last year. And again, they are the team that knocked out Carson Palmer. Now, it was a fluke play last year. It was nothing more than Mark Barron putting his hand on Palmer's shoulder.
He that guy's dangerous, up. Mark Barron.
He is. Yeah, he stepped up through the hand. It wasn't dirty. It wasn't even a hit. But, you know, somebody asked Carson about it this week, and he pretended like he had no idea what they were talking about. I think this Cardinals team is, I don't want to call it scary good because of the competition so far. I think this is more of a test for the Cardinals than people want to let on.
I would be extremely upset if, and Andrew, in our last podcast, we did name the Arizona Cardinals the team of Around the NFL. I wasn't asking for the whole song, just a snippet.
That's good.
But let's listen to it. Why not? Andrew, listen.
Let's bathe in it.
Know that I wrote the words.
Rich lyrics.
Who the heck recorded this?
Dick Banks, the one-man house band.
Still going.
Still going. Team. Now, pay attention to this last part, Andrew.
Special honor.
Gets
wow. Me. Where's your Poison shirt?
So, yes, they
or
are.
Or were you a Slayer fan?
Definitely, I was not a metal guy.
That, okay.
The kid, like the cool kids, when I was like late elementary school, early junior high, it was like to wear the Metallica shirts and stuff. Deb Hansis would never allow me. I couldn't even wear a Bart Simpson shirt.
You went third
I'm
person
with you.
Again there.
Oh. Well, that was, no, she said, no, Deb
Hansis. Oh, I thought you, I'm sorry.
Deb Hansis.
I'm sorry. My fault.
I was like, geez, now I don't even realize
my
I'm
fault.
Doing
my
it.
Fault.
Dan and I went to a Travis show a couple months ago, so that's that who's, should tell you where we are.
Who's Travis?
Exactly.
Great Scottish
oh, dear,
rock band.
Serious, who's that?
Not Travis Tritt.
Okay. A band from Scotland.
A mid-level band that peaked 15 years ago.
The polar opposite of Slayer, let's put it that way.
Yeah, basically. Anyway, so long story short. Cardinals, don't let us down here. You can't lay an egg at home after we named the team of ATL.
This game could feature the two biggest challengers to J.J. Watt for Defensive Player of the Year.
Mm.
Aaron Donald and Honey Badger, who is making – Honey Badger's making big plays every single game.
Yeah, we all picked the Cardinals to go 4-0, except for Connor Orr, who has the Rams pulling off the upset. Moving on, the Minnesota Vikings have won two straight after that ugly Monday night opener, and now they go to Denver to face the Broncos. Of course, the Broncos had the Sunday night win at Ford Field against the Lions. And really, Chris Wessling, this is the one of the better matchups of the week, maybe the best matchup, Adrian Peterson against the Denver Broncos defense. Yum.
I think this might tell you how bad the matchups are this week, that this is like the cream of the crop.
It's not the best week.
Yeah.
And the Broncos defense is one of the most fun units to watch this season. Adrian Peterson's probably the most fun running back to watch any season he's ever played. So in that sense, yeah, it's going to be – that should be fun to watch.
Did you guys see the Eric Weddle?
Yes.
But
business
the whiff
decision?
Attempt?
The business?
Ridiculous.
Oh, yeah. On the Peterson long touchdown?
Yes. Ridiculous.
So, I mean, we're sitting here to start week four, and Adrian Peterson leads the NFL in rushing. It's kind of like the world has returned to its axis here. I haven't seen a lot from Teddy Bridgewater this year, though. I'll say that. Not that he's playing poorly, although week one was ugly. I guess this is the formula? This
I don't
is
know.
What we thought it would be?
Last week was a bit of a fluke. I think week two was the formula. Teddy Bridgewater played a great game, but he only had to throw the ball 18 times.
Which is the formula.
Yeah. And
why not, right?
The crazy thing with Peterson is Chad Greenway said before last week's game, that was the first time that Adrian Peterson looked like Peterson in practice. So he was serviceable even in week two. He said after that game he started to look like Adrian Peterson again. Then he rips off this big game. And you start thinking, well, that makes sense. Like, this has been his preseason, essentially, the first couple weeks of the season. He's just getting into gear now after not playing for a year.
You know what's crazy is, so with, I think he's at 290 is his rushing number through three games, so less than 100 a game. He is actually on pace to have a better season than his 2,000-yard season. That makes no sense. He went nuts in the second half. Yeah. Makes no sense.
What happened to your boy Charles Johnson, man? He is really struggling.
Well, he's not healthy right now.
Right, but even before.
Well, you're right. I don't know, as a passing game in general.
I think that the team is different than it was last year.
Last year, when Charles Johnson played more down the stretch, they scored, what was it, 10 more points a game or something? Their offense was more centered around what they had to do. I think we talked about what the formula is, and it's not Charles Johnson.
Here's the problem, though. If you're going to get out of the NFC, a very good NFC, at least a top-heavy NFC, you cannot just lean on Adrian Peterson to save the day. Teddy Bridgewater has to take the lead. You need guys like Charles Johnson to step up. It's just not good enough to just have Peterson. It's not going to work.
Two things. Number one, remember when Mike Wallace played for the Vikings?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't. Okay. Number two, number two is I didn't know if – I don't think anyone saw this as a two-team division. But it is now turned into a two-team division. I thought it was going to be one of the better divisions in football. I didn't think the Bears were any good.
It's a good point.
But it's a two-team division now.
Yeah, and I think Minnesota has the pieces. They've been quiet, but this is a tough game for Denver. Peyton Manning made progress last week, but this is a great test for that offensive line and him getting the ball out quickly. I know it was because they were playing the Chargers in part, but that's one of the better defensive lines in the league. Anthony Barr's coming off his best game as a pro. Everson Griffin's playing well. Linval Joffe's, Sharif Floyd. They have a lot of just players there, and I think it's going to be a tough game for Denver to move the ball.
We have all picked the Broncos to win the game. A little surprised.
I am too.
But I guess that defense and an improving Peyton Manning carries the day. Do you see it the same way, Andrew?
In Minnesota, yes.
In Denver.
Then, yes, we have all picked the Denver Broncos to win this game.
That's what happened there.
Yes.
All right. So, again, this is Andrew Siciliano, the host of the Around the NFL TV show. He's going to leave us in a second. But before he goes, we want to talk to Andrew. And, gentlemen, we're all going to talk about this a little at the back end of the show. But since we have Andrew here, the NFL is beginning its annual trip to jolly old England.
10th straight year. Jeff Darlington got that trip. How about that?
Did you put in for it?
I did not. I put in years ago. It never worked. I was trying to take TA there. Said Kara Henderson and I could go there. We'd fly home on Friday. I'd go do red zone. She could stay and have fun. I never got it. But this year, Jeff Darlington, he took his tight suits to a place where they take tight suits.
Share some of your other career frustrations, Andrew.
No. I'm not frustrated. I went to London this summer. I saw Wimbledon. It was great. Yeah.
Andrew also did the Olympic coverage. This guy is professional. But here's the question right
journo.
Now. Here he is. Professional journo. A favorite cultural export from England.
Ooh.
Andrew Siciliano.
All right. I like Bond. I'm a big Bond fan.
Awesome.
On the literary side, you can't argue with Dickens or Sherlock Holmes, certainly. There's plenty of music. Can I go Monty Python, though? Or Monty Python?
Sure, absolutely.
Uh-huh, and the Flying Circus. I'm a huge Python fan. Saw Spamalot of the Hollywood Bowl a couple of weeks ago. Fantastic.
So, and here is some Monty Python right here.
So always look at the bright side of life.
Let's give it a little listen.
You guys don't know your Python, do you? At all?
I don't at all, really.
No.
I've watched it.
And I'm happy that you've highlighted this, Andrew. Tell me what made Monty Python great.
Because it's absurd. It is absurd as anything on TV.
The bright side of life.
just a notch above Benny Hill in your book?
Though so much better than Benny Hill. I mean, how could you, like for example, The Life of Brian. You guys never saw The Life of Brian?
I have seen it. I have.
Okay. Life of Brian is brilliant.
Holy Grail is brilliant.
Holy Grail is brilliant.
All right, what's the starting point?
The Ministry of Funny Walks, brilliant.
If I need to get in, where do I? What's a good starting point?
Well, you get the. I'll give you the entire Flying Circus DVD set if you want. Do you still have a DVD player?
Actually, I do. I do.
Okay. I would watch Life of Brian. Have you seen Life of Brian?
No. I'm totally.
Okay. It's
Holy
an allegory.
Everyone should know the Holy Grail.
And the Holy Grail.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Come
Meaning
on.
The life where they're.
I've seen Mr. Bean. Is that
puking a lot?
Mr. Bean.
That's as far as my British humor.
Rowan Atkinson?
That's a bad one.
As a child.
That's a terrible answer, Mr. Bean. I hope none of us have that answer.
As our favorite export?
Yeah,
I wouldn't call Bean my favorite export, but as a kid.
It's up there with Belvedere.
They used to play it on HBO. And
A lot,
and I liked it. But
by the way, second Monty choice. Yes. Second choice would probably be Keira Knightley.
Ooh.
That's fair. All right, we're inching closer to a ladies' power rankings here. Scarlett and now Keira both brought up today.
And nothing says dork. More than a top 10 hot chicks.
All right, coming up next, the 10 hottest babes in Hollywood.
Nothing turns you into Wayne's World more than a top 10 hot chick list.
All right, let me try this, Andrew. You're as you said, I've said before, you're.
I'm not saying you're the dork, by the way, Dan.
No,
I'm just saying.
But I am.
Yeah, no, well, whatever.
The Around the NFL television show is on 5 days a week.
It is.
Let me tell you something. What time it's on? 6 p.m. Eastern.
Uh-huh.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And Friday.
Uh-huh.
But however, Thursday, it's game day here at NFL Network. Uh-huh. It's on at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern. I did it.
Man, I could see the gears grinding.
It's so hard for me.
I was concerned towards the end of that, but you
really
pulled it off.
Really not that hard.
When you travel overseas, how do you
I don't.
The time zones must mess you up. Like,
I
what
just
time
stay
is
in
it back
America.
Home?
That's it.
Really?
America. No, I
you should get out more.
No, I'm doing my best.
Dork.
Listen, not all of us can cover the Olympics, Andrew.
First of all, I cover the Olympics from Stamford, Connecticut.
Oh. All right, that's less impressive.
Which is just like Sochi, but different.
Andrew Siciliano, thank you for joining us. Please come back next week.
Good night now.
Bye-bye. Moving on, another late game, the Green Bay Packers. Coming off a win on Monday night, now face the San Francisco 49ers, who have looked, let's face it, like one of the worst teams in football for two straight weeks now. So this seems on paper to be another chance for Aaron Rodgers to pad some stats against a defense that's not very good. True or false, Greg?
What's true or false? That he has a chance to
pad his stats against a defense
that's
not very good.
Everyone has a chance to do that every week. I don't think it'll necessarily. I mean,
thank you, Greg.
Who's gonna stop?
You did it.
What did I do?
You're very smart, and you won. Go ahead.
Well, if I won, why do I have to give?
Listen, anybody can win on any given game because it's just 11 guys on each side.
I mean, if the question is, can Aaron Rodgers shred anyone? Of course, the answer I would say is yes. I think the 49ers have a chance. Why not? It's football.
Oh God.
It is weird because the Niners team we saw at
home. I hated that analysis, Greg. I love your analysis all the time. That one I didn't like.
Well, the question, it's hard to say.
All right, it's a bad question.
That Rodgers couldn't do well against anyone, especially this defense, which has been absolutely.
But is there a very good chance that Rodgers is going to throw out one of those, you know, devastating performances again where it blows the game out by the third quarter?
I think the 49ers will figure some things out and do better on defense.
Of course there's a good chance. This defense has been shredded by Big Ben and Carson Palmer the last 2 weeks, and Rodgers is better than both of them.
A-Rod said, by the way, I'm no MJ. Felt like a shot at Chris Wessling.
Well, look, I know that Scott Tolzien is stealing my thunder here. I mean, 3 weeks after I make the comparison, Aaron Rodgers' backup comes out and makes the same comparison.
Well, wait, is ODB upset?
Well, look.
Now you've got two guys who are Michael Jordan.
Patrick Crawley came over and made the same
Patrick
comment.
Patrick Crawley works.
I realize you're talking head versus
right,
physical
and I
tools.
Shot I him down it. Swiftly and said that's it. Simplistic. I was talking about, you know, specific traits in both cases, and with Aaron Rodgers it was more about
in terms of his transition
head.
And flow game, is Dan an MJ type of host?
Well, on his best days, yeah.
I'll take that.
That's good.
Mark, I see you as like an MJ, but like the baseball MJ.
Yeah, all right, that's fair. Well, that's I like that. He was
he
relaxed.
He compared me to Craig Elo early in the week.
You're more like the 45 jersey.
That was MJ just saying, I'm getting out of it. I'm just going to experience life. And that's what makes him one of the more fascinating athletes that he went and did that. So
my
I'll take that as a compliment.
My analysis like what earlier you did in this game was Luke Longley.
Judd got rings, I think.
Judd Bushler.
We all got the Packers. Anybody takes the – I'm not even checking. If anyone took the Niners, they're fired. I've got clearance from Roger Goodell.
I'm glad I didn't pick home teams this week.
The Dallas Cowboys with Brandon Whedon lost their first game of the year to the Falcons last week. Now they face the Saints. And a couple things here. Drew Brees, he resumed throwing. His status is unclear for week four. Again, he's speaking optimistically, but we don't know if we're going to see Drew Brees. And then a little bit of trade news, gentlemen. I'm going to give it my best. The Saints acquired tight end Michael Uumanamanui. Got it?
Close. That was like humana, humana, humana.
What is it?
I think it's Uumanamanui.
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 I thought it was Uu.
But it was interesting who they got in exchange for him. Saints that gave up Akeem Hicks, a defensive end. And I believe Hicks was essentially their first pick in the Bounty Gate fallout draft.
And he had a good rookie year and looked like a very promising player and then kind of fell
out. Oh, he's going to be awesome with the Patriots.
I think it well,
probably
I know,
will.
Dan, your comment right away when you saw this trade went down is enough with the Patriots. What is this, their eighth trade
How
of the year?
How many trades have they made
I
in the past? No
limit on trades?
It's kind of fascinating, though. And it's also it's like Connor Orr's awesome. Operating out of their front office, just wheeling and dealing, doing whatever he needs to do.
Then trade for Griff Whalen and make him the face of the franchise. I'd love that.
Maybe it's a little, you know, Bill Belichick, he knows this Tom Brady thing is going to end soon. We gotta do whatever we can to try to win right now.
And the Sizzler.
Maybe. I doubt it.
Sizzler, yeah, get off the schneid, New England.
We used to have hero picks before Greg ruined it. And you picked the Cowboys to win this game.
Absolutely.
Defend what used to be a hero.
Brandon Whedon is going to throw 4 touchdowns. That was my bold prediction. I could be very wrong, but they will still win because I just look at the Saints' defense. And the Saints have not – they've lost their last 6 at home. The Cowboys have won their last 10 on the road. Throw all that out. I think the Cowboys are just a better team.
How is that a hero pick? I mean, I guess
– I don't know. That's just fluky.
Drew Brees, if he does – I'm assuming Drew Brees does not play. That I think, is the safer guess. And Luke McCown, I know he played pretty well last week, but he's saddled with the worst defense in the league. And the Cowboys' offense looked
and
I always pick against Brandon Whedon.
Everyone's going out of their way to say Brandon Whedon didn't look that bad this week. Didn't he throw a pick six?
It wasn't a pick six, but it was a. Or was did they return that?
I think it led directly to a touchdown. At the very
didn't
least.
Look as bad as Brandon Whedon it has.
And their offense shut down totally in the second half because the Falcons knew that the Cowboys weren't going to do anything but throw it to the running back.
No, it's all about the offensive line, who gave Brandon Whedon great protection and gave Joseph Randle, who by the way is just trashing your boy Darren McFadden. This are you ready to wave the white flag
well,
on that one?
Well, guess what?
Hold on. Kristen Michael, first team reps this week.
Well, it's week 4. It's
you're
about
changing
time.
Changing who you're backing now.
But Darren McFadden has thrown a touchdown pass more recently than Luke McCown.
I think
so is MJD.
If the Cowboys' offensive line is as good as we've said it is, it can dominate and win a game against a lousy, lousy Saints defense who got nowhere near
it's the better football.
The Falcons just showed the blueprint for how to shut down a Brandon Whedon offense when they did it the third and fourth quarters last week.
Well, then end the season.
What was that? I'm sure they were trying to win the game in the first
half.
That
was line up all your defenders 10 yards from the line of scrimmage and dare Whedon to throw past it.
Which takes us now to the Monday night game. The Detroit Lions. Oh, poor Detroit. 0-3. Already really basically done now. Now they got to go to Seattle in prime time to face the Seattle Seahawks at CenturyLink Field. This is a very, very tough spot, Mark Sessler. For a Lions team, let's face it, if they don't win, their season's all but over, and they just drew a tough spot with the schedule.
It's not poor Detroit. It's poor football fans, because this is the second week in a row that we have to watch this Lions team in primetime. And
but this was supposed to be a good thing.
Yeah. Sure. But how high should we get about a Matthew Stafford-led team ever again? We shouldn't have before this season, but there is a lot of talent, and they're not making the most of it. It's in Seattle. And Seattle, by the way, this game, again, should not be close. This is the Seahawks team we thought they were.
We don't know if we'll see Marshawn Lynch in this game. He's
I'm not sure that matters
right
with the way that
Thomas
the rookie Rawls. Played.
Thomas
fantastic.
Rawls
he looked
be able
better
to step
than Lynch.
In and do damage himself. This is not it's a different Detroit defense, a different defensive line without Sue. Another move, just like DeMarco Murray. Nobody won that. It doesn't look like anyone's winning the Sue move either, Lions or Dolphins so far. Greg, can you make a case for the Lions shocking the football?
Greg can make a case for anything.
World, yes.
No, but I don't mind seeing them in primetime. Compare the Chiefs back-to-back weeks, you know, I had a problem with that. The Lions, even at 0-3, are more interesting to me than a lot of teams out there because of Calvin Johnson, because of Golden Tate, because of Amir Abdullah. I think they can give the Seahawks a game here. They at least have the firepower to get it together for a week. They have been very consistent, though. They've looked about like the same team each week, which is concerning when that team is like a C-minus, D-plus type of team.
How about Patcher, by the way? Pick the Lions, bless his heart.
An injury could save the Lions from themselves. Joik Bell, who would have to triple his yards per carry average to reach Trent Richardson status.
Oh, my God.
So he averages 1.1 yards per carry. When's the last time you saw something like that?
I can't think of a year where Bell is not a star running back on any level. He's a plotter. But where so many lead backs have gotten out of the gate to disastrous starts.
And Marshawn Lynch, I wouldn't say has had a disastrous start, but
he's
not had a good one, and he might not be playing in this game. We still haven't seen the 2015 Seahawks like exactly what they are, mostly because last week they were playing Jimmy Clausen, and the first couple weeks they weren't so great, didn't have Cam Chancellor. Like, this is a chance for us to see it.
And this might be it. This could be the Seahawks juggernaut coming out party. All right, those are the previews, preview of week four. All right. Now, before we go, we talked about, with Andrew when he was here, favorite cultural export from England. And be good to go around the horn here. I'm curious. We'll start with you, Mark Sessler. Your favorite cultural export.
Well, you know, I lived there when I was a kid. So
yes,
a lot of the stuff that I remember is not really exports.
By the way, Mark brings up that he spent time in England more than Greg brought up that he gave to charity.
Well, my point is that my fondest...
I brought that up twice. Once to tell you it was happening, and then one more time.
Yeah, my fondest memories of England happened, you know, aren't things that I'm buying off shelves. But I will say this. The British office, because I love the American office, too, and I'm done with the debate of which one's better. But the British office laid out the groundwork and the skeleton for what the American show struggled with for a season or two, and then they got on their own pace. But the British one got it done in two seasons, saying we're going to do 2 6-episode seasons and a special. We can tell a story that quickly. We don't need to bleed everything dry for 8 years.
I can wake up one morning and go, oh, I don't feel like working today. Can I just stay in bed? Oh, I don't know. Better ask the boss. David, can I stay in bed all day? Yes, you can, David. Both me. That's not me in bed with another bloke called David.
One of the great debates, if you want to have a fun debate, and I agree with you on The Office, the U.S. version, stayed on the air too long. It's a different world, a different business model. But if you put Michael Scott, seasons 1 through 3, against David Brent, the two Office seasons in the U.K. and the Christmas special or whatever it was, that is a great battle. What is a better character?
What's
funnier?
It's very easy for me.
I have strong opinions on this.
Let's hear it.
The British office is way better than the U.S.
It's
not even the
way
same ballpark, I don't think.
Thank you.
Well, they're different shows.
Yeah, that's fair.
They're different shows, but Steve Carell turned his character into his own character. What made the American one great is they all became their own thing, finally. But David Brent cannot be touched in my book by anything that happened on the American office.
I respectfully disagree.
That's fine.
Because I think David Brent, he's amazing too. But I think Steve Carell and Michael Scott, that was a great
character. It's British versus American humor is very different too.
I stopped watching the U.S. Office because I didn't find Michael Scott to be a believable character.
Well, he was never too believable.
It got to the point when we were like, I'm just so frustrated that nobody could possibly. It's like Ben Stiller movies. Nobody could be that stupid. Nobody could mess up that many things simultaneously.
That he ever became a manager is pretty funny, but you could say the same thing about David Brent.
I don't know. Brent was
Brent's
more of a
such
tragic
an original,
character.
Though. Yeah. He's such an original.
All right, Wes, your favorite cultural export from.
Well, I sort of lied on this.
England.
I sort of
Why
lied
would you
on
lie?
This.
Don't lie.
Because I couldn't make up my mind between the Stones and the Beatles.
That is such a cop-out.
I know. I couldn't make
up
my mind.
So what are you lying about then?
I went with sarcastic butlers.
What?
Usually one must go to a bowling alley to meet a woman of your stature.
That is Hobson from Arthur. And there's that blueprint of all these, television shows and movies that have the sarcastic, dry-humored English butler.
If we had and I wish we did, and let's make sure we get it for the future. Andrew Siciliano's You Sir Are a Coward drop, I drop it right now.
There's nothing
harder than Beatles versus Stones, but I would have loved to hear Wes, a man that has opinions, to take a side and run.
Well, it depends. On Sunday mornings, give me the Beatles. You know, they're kind of easy to listen to.
Okay.
Put you in that mellow mood. On a Friday or Saturday night at Huckapoo's, give me the Stones, baby.
Beatles easy for me, but Stones are amazing.
I will also pick music, and I will go with Oasis. And now, a band that obviously was influenced heavily, perhaps too heavily, by the Beatles and also the Rolling Stones. And to me, this is when I got into music around 94, like heavily. That's right when Definitely Maybe came out, the first Oasis album. And it was so different than everything else on the radio because everything was post-Kurt Cobain, everyone pretending, trying to sound like Nirvana, everyone miserable. Everything was just like down-tuned guitars. And then there was this band from Britain out of nowhere, Oasis, who actually wrote a song that we're listening to called Live Forever.
Yeah.
Their first song on their first album was called I'm a Rock and Roll Star. And
I agree with you.
It was this blast of fresh air that music needed at the time. And they couldn't sustain it very long, but in those first, especially those first two albums, they were everything I could ever want from a rock band, and they, to this day, are one of my favorite bands of all time.
This is one of my, I always give you guys grief about Oasis, but this is one of my favorite songs ever. I think I got drunk in high school more to this song than any song.
Yeah, I like,
man.
I
well,
like
that's
things,
inappropriate.
I like optimism.
What do you mean?
I like,
I'm kidding. No, it's totally appropriate.
I like the idea of having a fun time and enjoying your life, and that's what this band was about. And they, what made it even better, they wrote all those songs like Rock and Roll Star and Cigarettes and Alcohol when they were poor. They came from Manchester, a single parent home, and they, all these dreams they had, they made it work.
I like that it's two brothers that
they dreamt
want
and made
to destroy
it
each other, too.
Yes, the Gallagher brothers, originally from Ireland. All right, here we go.
What?
Greg Rosenthal.
Oh, I'm going?
Culture, yes. It's your turn.
That's how this works,
Greg. I didn't want to
cultural
go.
Expert.
He doesn't want to go.
Why don't you want to go?
No, I want to go. I'm going to give the English, you know, credit for maintaining that language they came up with. So many great authors getting it done right now from England. That's my favorite expert.
Well, let's hear more.
Well, I'd go the current guys, Edward St. Aubin, I'm a big fan of, Ian McEwan, Julian Barnes, Ishiguro. Big fan of. I mean, you can go back through history too. Jane Austen, Graham Greene.
Never heard of Jane Austen.
George Eliot is one of my favorite writers.
George Orwell. I mean, I'm just saying, if you're lining up the English authors, whether it's now or back in the day, it's a murderer's row.
Willie the Shakes.
That's the one that's changed my life the most.
How about Shakespeare? Ever heard of that guy?
Willie the Shakes.
If I were more cynical, I would think that this was Greg taking a shot at everyone else by saying, oh, you enjoy your little...
buy your little records and watch your little sitcom show.
I'll
like
be
reverse,
my books.
Reverse bullying. I actually thought about, oh, should I just pretend that some TV show meant more to me, or should I actually be honest and say something that I believe and is important to me?
No, that's good. I'm just joking. It's good.
Come on, Greg.
It's
you're
good for
into,
you to
you're
cover
into
that
butlers.
Realm.
Yeah. You're into the butlers.
Really, the only person... I'm a little disappointed that Wes not taking on
Stones. I gave you what
Beatles.
Is my truth. I thought that's what this is about.
I could not.
You cannot separate it by day, Wes. Pick a band right now. Come on.
The Beatles were slightly better,
but I
enjoy listening to the Stones
more. Of course.
I love the Stones and the Beatles, but if I had to pick one, it'd probably be the Beatles.
Before my 30th birthday, it would have been a blowout, and the Beatles would have won easily, but the older I get, the more I appreciate the Stones.
All right, let's turn our attention now. Behind the glass, his name is Brendan McGinnis, and we call him the Irishman. And today is his last day.
That is correct.
Brandon's last day. It is also our friend Sully, Sean Sullivan's last day. Two of the great soldiers behind the glass, TD's Army, I like to call it. Brandon, your final day, your thoughts right now.
I'm happy that I made it up to soldier because I used to be henchman. So I'm feeling pretty good. But I was just listening to you guys and I'm thinking I'm just basically lame duck president right now. It's just, you guys were just going, doing your thing. I started off as a substitute teacher, letting you guys do your thing. And you know what? I was like, you know what? I'm just going to let them have their fun today.
I like that. I mean, listen, you would have been welcome to be in the conversation.
Patriots are on a bye, so.
No, the Patriots are on a bye. But we wish you the best of luck, both you and Sully, and you guys did such great work. So I thought before we leave today, maybe you deserve – a little song.
A little serenade. Yeah. All right.
I will remember you. Will you remember me? Don't let your life pass you by. Weep not for the man.
They got the light.
They're holding up their iPhone lights.
That is, you could keep the music playing while we, that could be our playout music as a honor of you, Brandon. That is it for, yes, and best of luck to Brandon.
You're going
to
do great.
And we'll
see, whatever
you
do.
We're going to see you at the pub after after work today, right?
Sure thing.
Very good. We'll have a drink on us, on the Around the NFL team. So, yes, we'll be back on Sunday, Sunday night with our wrap-up recap of all of Sunday's games. And, you know, tune in for that. It's our big flagship show. But until then, this is Dan Hansa signing off for the Quiet Storm, the mailman, the boss, the Irishman behind the glass. Farewell, Irishman and Sully. We'll meet again.